So I was asked, or I actually volunteered to do pick up Section P for this person who had to leave. So it was the end of the day. I hadn't really prepped for that, although I know restraints in this section quite well. And I was a little punchy. I'm not quite as punchy today as I was then. I had been teaching for a few days. But I started off April, and I'm going to do the same here. So first off, I've been in long-term care for a long time. And so as I looked out and we started talking about restraints, I said, does everyone remember back? Well, first off, who was in long-term care in the 80s? Wow, a lot of people. All right. I don't feel so old anymore. Okay, I'm sure there's people who were in even sooner than that. But really, so let's think about the 80s in long-term care in the United States. So we used restraints, right? Yeah. What kind of restraints did we use? Posies. Okay, how about like the crotch restraint? How about the vest restraint? Everyone had a vest restraint, right? And usually some other type of restraint. And of course the tie waist restraints. How about the Houdinis? Oh yeah, okay. How about the wrist restraints, right? We used to tie people down all the time. The mitts, big mitts, yeah, okay. How about we put the vest restraint and then we bring them out in the hallway and tie them to a sheet and to their wheelchair? Right? Am I making this stuff up? No. What else do we do? You tie their sheet to their bed frame? Yeah, anyone ever heard that one? Someone told me about Velcroing. They had a whole system of Velcroing the sheets. I didn't know that one. What else? Locking wheelchairs. What else do we do? Hand rails. Haldol, right? We're not even getting into it. We're talking about physical restraints. It was like an awakening when we took all the Haldol away, right? It was amazing. We think about it. I mean, you went into a nursing home. What did you see? Everyone was tied up, right? So were we awful people back then? Were we horrible? No. No, we did what we knew and what we thought was best at that time, right? And we've learned since that time. I can tell you, you know, back in the day, I had one, like, really creative CNA whose resident, she couldn't find the wrist restraints, so she took knee highs and tied the knee highs to the rails. I mean, I found people when I was a night supervisor with the, you know, the vest restraint up around here and they're between the side rail and the, yeah, all but hanging. I mean, it's sad, but that was a fact, right? And trays, how many people had trays on in the Jerry chairs? Right, you know, at least 50 people lined up, right? I mean, that was what we saw. That's what we knew. All right, now tomorrow, I'm just, to divert a little bit, same thing, late 70s, early 80s, let's say. People who work maybe in long-term care and acute care, what was like the greatest thing we did to treat pressure ulcers? Maalox and the heat lamps. Who did the heat lamps? All right, for heat lamps, right? How about the Maalox? We used to roll the old people over and tape their cheeks to the side rail. Right? Okay? So, for all you youngins out there, you people who were not around for those days, and I know that there's people, old folks that are older than I am or have been in healthcare longer than I am, whatever, who could tell other stories, but these are facts. This is what we used to do. So we've learned a lot. It's tremendous. So everything that we do, we need to take in kind of in pace and realize we are making strides as we understand the devastation and the negative outcomes from putting a restraint and the fact that people die even today or have horrible outcomes because of worsening falls, climbing over side rails and whatnot, and fractures, all the things that we do. Now, let me go back to one of my questions I asked. Why did we restrain so many people? Why? We prevented falls. Why? Because what? We knew best. We were the parent, right? Kind of that parent figure. We did what we thought was best. We were the parent towards them. You can't, honey, you can't do that. So we're just going to tie you in. You can't fall. Now you have a pressure ulcer, you're incontinent, and you've got contractures, but you didn't fall. Right? Okay. So, you know, do no harm. We did a lot of harm. And there are people today who still struggle with the idea that we really could, if we were creative, and we had the resources and the time, truly, I think we really could be restraint-free. There are states that have done it. There are homes that have done it. There are corporations or groups of homes that have done it and been quite successful and would love to share with you what they've done. So I encourage you, if you happen to be in one of those facilities who still has a lot of restraints or is struggling with this, please find someone in your community, in your area, who has been successful and meet with them. Go see what are they doing differently. A lot of it comes down to attitude. I mean, I remember being in the nursing home. I was a director, and I will get actually to coding in a second, but I struggled so hard. I got my day staff and my evening staff on board. It took my night staff, click. I mean, all the side rails went up. Everyone needed to, I mean, I struggled with restraints. They, night shift, ultimately on the weekends, would put restraints on people and get orders. They come back Monday morning, have to get them all DC'd. I mean, it was a battle. So I put a decree in place in my facility because I believed and I had seen what could happen. And I said, no one in this facility can have a restraint put on unless you call me. 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Do you know how many people wanted to call me at 2 a.m. in the morning? They thought long and hard and creative before they had to call me at 2 in the morning. Did I get calls? Yeah, I did. But I made it difficult for them to put a restraint on someone. I made it hard, and we worked through it. It took time, but then they bought into it, and they understood, and they started thinking creatively and being able to be successful. So change is difficult. That being said, MDS 3.0 is change. And how do we all feel about it? We're scared, right? I'd be scared. We're apprehensive. We're scared. We think it's going to be more difficult. We don't believe the gold standard nurses. We don't think it's real. But I can tell you, I believe in this. I believe that it's a dynamic process. We will continue to improve it, and that hopefully it will really be the tool that it needs to be, even though we serve many masters. As Terry Motta always says, this tool serves a lot of masters, but we can make this work for us. So, related to Section P and restraints. We're going to talk about what constitutes a physical restraint and for the purposes of the MDS 3.0, and we're going to explain how to assess a resident for physical restraint and then how to code Section B. So what we're going to do here is we are going to record the frequency that we are using the restraint in what setting. So it's like an in-bed and out-of-bed type of setting if you've looked at the tool. And we're going to evaluate whether or not the device meets the definition of a physical restraint for the purposes of the MDS 3.0 according to the following three criteria. And we should probably, this should be a creed, we should probably all stand and like raise our right hand for this one. Because it's any manual method, physical or mechanical device, material or equipment, attached or adjacent to the resident's body that the individual cannot remove easily, which restricts the freedom of movement of normal access to one's body. I can bet that most of you out there could almost have recited that along with me, right? Okay. So what does that mean? What does that mean? So only the devices that categorize in Section P100 that have the effect of restraining the resident will be coded. It is not the intent, okay? It's not about the intent. It's the effect upon the resident. The use of physical restraints is not prohibited. There are some people who say it's prohibited. It's not. I just told you my belief And I think we've learned that it's not the best thing that we should do, but it's not prohibitive. And it can't be imposed for discipline or convenience. And I know people struggle with that sometimes. The staff's like, well, I just can't. I mean, they're running after someone, right? They're running. And then all of a sudden, you realize that, you know, Sally's not running around the hallway in her wheelchair. When I say running, I mean literally in her wheelchair running. And you look, and Sally's in her room, and she's, you know, calling out or whatever. And you go in, and what is Sally? Why is she still? Because what did they do to her wheelchair? They locked it. Have you ever seen the residents? They're pulling that wheelchair down the hallway. No one. Yep. And that one that stands up and has a wheelchair on their back. Okay. Yeah. Have you ever seen that? Come on, guys. I don't make this stuff up. All right. So locking that wheelchair. What do you think the effect? And I just described two people. What do you think the effect of locking the wheelchair for those residents was? A restraint. We don't think about locking a wheelchair as a restraint, do we? But in certain situations, like I just described, because we're trying to keep someone somewhere for, you know, staff convenience, in that particular situation, that may be considered a restraint. Okay, but we certainly weren't going to be coding it right here. So must assess the resident's needs and medical symptoms before using a physical restraint. And the use of physical restraints should be the exception, not the rule. Please, and you know what, it comes down from leadership, folks. I mean, you could have a unit where you have a unit manager or a supervisor really believes in not restraining and really do everything. But unless you have really good, strong leadership, meaning nursing leadership and administrative leadership, who really sets the picture and the tone, they're the ones who are going to drive this and support it in your nursing home. So it needs to come from the top. So P0100, the importance, it can play a limited role in medical care. We know that it limits mobility, and of course we know the negative outcomes from restraint. You know, even that resident who is a frequent flyer or frequent faller, as we call them, right? Number one reason why we end up restraining someone, right, is for falls. And we take that resident. What happens when we put them even just in a wheelchair? They lose function, don't they? And they lose it pretty darn quickly. So we got to keep our people up and moving as long as possible. So even just not restraining them, but taking them and really confining them or signing them and putting them in a wheelchair, again, not meeting this, we can lose a lot of function. But we can cause depressed mood. Can you imagine if you were able to get up and walk around all the time and all of a sudden now you had to be in a wheelchair? That's hard. All right? You have less of a sense of self. And then if you have to be tied in, what does it do? People get really agitated with it. So agitation, inevitably, you know, people will say, you know, we need to put this on. Well, the person is so agitated, staff spent half the time trying to calm the person down for the thing that you put them on. If you just got up and walked them around or maybe put them in an activity or did something else, you wouldn't have had to use the belt, the lap buddy, whatever it is that you had to put on that particular person. So we know that cognitively impaired residents are at higher risk due to physical restraints for entrapment, injury, and death. I mean, that just makes sense. They can't understand how to go through the process of releasing it for many of our residents. And then there's significant risk of restraint-related injuries or death. And the literature supports this. All you need to do is go ahead and do a search on this. CMS has published some stuff on restraints. So in the physical restraint section, we already talked about this. I just went through this definition, and the definition is written right on the MDS, so you have it there as reference material. So it removes easily, can be removed intentionally by the resident in the same way that manner that it was applied by the staff. So it's not going to be considered a restraint if the resident can take it off. Well, I can't even tell you how many times I've gone out to facilities, and you know the lap buddy, that's that foam thing that fits in the front of the wheelchair? Okay? And people say to me, Mary gets it off. She gets it off all the time. But it's not upon command. Mary fiddles for 2.5 hours and then Mary gets it off. Guess what? It's a restraint. Yes, you know, or someone fiddling with a belt, if they fiddle enough with it and they get agitated enough, sometimes they can get it off. But that doesn't meet the intent at that point. They can't. You need to be able to go up to someone and say, you know, can you remove this for me? And if they say, oh, yes, and they unclick it and do whatever and open it for you or show you exactly how to do it, all right, for that particular person. Just do it on a regular basis. Put a system and process in place to make sure that it doesn't transition from something that does not meet the criteria for a restraint to something that does meet the criteria if the resident changes at all. And then consider the resident's physical condition and ability to accomplish his or her objective or what they need to do. And then freedom of movement. Any change in place or position for the body or any part of the body that the person is physically able to control or have access to. So that's when we talk the freedom of movement. So if someone wants to scratch their knee, that they can, you know, if we have a tray and they can get to that knee, or if they want to cross their legs, or they want whatever they want to do, and they need to have freedom of access to their body. Otherwise, it potentially the effect upon the resident could be that it's a restraint. We have lots of different types of restraints, and there's a bunch listed here. They could be facility practices. Again, Velcro on sheets, that's another one that's here. I've never seen that, but I guess it's if it made it to the list here, it must be happening somewhere in the United States. You know, I always say to staff, taking someone and locking their chair and putting them up against a wall or up against a table and they can't move, the effect could be the same thing. Putting them in a chair, again, in another area where they couldn't get up and move. So we want to make sure when we're coding this particular item, we're going to look at the medical record, we're going to talk to all the staff across all of the shifts. We want to make sure we know what's going on in this particular resident, something's not going on at night that we're not aware of, okay? So you want to make sure that you're talking to the staff. Observe the resident to determine the effect of the resident's normal function, and do not focus on the type or the intent or the reason for the use. It's the effect upon the resident. So when you teach this, that's the key. Because people want to say to me, but Ann, if they didn't have that, they couldn't get out of their rooms and they couldn't go to activities and whatnot. I'm not arguing with you. That's great. I'm not saying that it's not the best thing for this particular resident. And I'm not telling you you can't do it. But I'm telling you to code the MDS, what is the effect of whatever that you're applying or doing to that resident's ability to have free access to their body and to move around. And then make your evaluation from that point forward. Do not focus, so we just talked about this, focus only on the effect of the device on the resident. We've now said that about three different ways in four different slides here. So hopefully you've gotten the message there. And assess each resident individually. So this is the other thing. I wrote a note to myself that I wanted to make sure that I covered here. That we want to make sure people have come up to me. And there's a couple of words I want you to stay away from with restraints. Always and never. So the words always and the words never. Remember that as related to restraints. So I just finished teaching this at the April conference. And people came up to the side and were asking me some questions. They said, well, you know, a consultant came in and they said, XY, we never should code a restraint if it's XYZ. Or we always code lipped mattresses as restraints. You know those concave mattresses? Okay. What do you think of that? You have to look at each, what's the effect upon the resident? It depends. So it's never and always or never and ever. So as soon as someone spits that out of their mouth, stop them. Say stop. Can't think that way. There is no blanket. Everyone wants a blanket. They want a widget. They want to put it in a hole. They want this to be, I mean, they want it to be black and white. And guess what? This section, along with other sections in the MDS, is not black and white. It's gray. And various shades of gray. So you have to look at the particular resident. So one device may be a resident, may be a restraint for me, and may not be a restraint for someone else. So we have to look at it that way. And until you get your staff thinking that way, you're going to really struggle with this particular item. That doesn't mean internally that a facility can't say every time we apply a device, we go through a standard operating procedure. We talk to the family, we talk to the resident, we do all these assessments, we care plan it, we actually put it as a physician order, we care plan for very close observation and whatever. So even there, they're not going to code it on the MDS as a restraint. They still have an internal process that has all the other mechanisms in place. That's fine. What we're looking at here is how do we code the MDS for an item. So remember the never and always. So the device must meet the full definition. So it they need to have a physician documentation of the medical symptom that supports the use of the restraint, and I find that often missing. What is the medical symptom that we're treating here? And physician order of the type of physical restraint and the parameters of use. When are you going to use it? When is it going to be on? When is it going to be off? And then care plan and a process in place for systematic and gradual physical restraint reduction and elimination. I think we've done a better job in the United States. I mean, we think literally now we can say the positives, where we were in the 80s and where we are now in 2010 were related to restraints. Even if you look into the latter part of the 90s, so in the last 10 to 12 years, huge improvement. I think we're getting there, but we need to continue down this road. So what we're going to be looking to code here is how often the restraint was used, the location of the physical restraint, and what we mean here is the two places, in bed or in the chair or out of the bed. So how are they? What happens when they're in the bed and what happens when they're out of the bed or in a chair? And then the category of restraints are bed rails or chairs to prevent rising, trunk or limb restraints, and we're going to code all physical restraints used during that 7-day look-back period. So when you look at the MDS items here, you have the coding methodology on, as you're looking at this, your left. You wouldn't want me doing surgery on you, right? I'd be the surgeon doing this. Okay, so on your left here, the coding. So was it not used, used less than daily, or used daily? That's pretty simple. And then we want to say, enter the code in the boxes. So did they use bed rails? Yes. So in my head, they're using bed rails. And for this particular resident, it meets the criteria of restraints, right? Because there's not every bed rail we're coding here, right? So we've done all the assessments. We've determined that this particular resident's side rails meet the restraint definition, and we use them daily. So you would put a 2 in the A saying we use the bed rails. And then trunk restraints, limb restraints, and then others. And then under chairs and out of bed, we have chairs to prevent rising. And then we have other. So items that are not specifically listed here but meet the criteria for restraint would be coded under other. And then we would expect all of those other components to be in place, right? The physician order, the care planning, treating the medical symptom, even though we're not saying what that other is here. So, and then we talked about this already. And other means any device that does not fit the list and it meets the criteria. It should be care planned and monitored. We talked about that. Okay. So where are we time-wise? We have like 5 minutes, right? Yeah, so I think it ended at 4:30, I think, my session. Okay. Oh, so I got a lot of time. Oh, we definitely, we won't go over. Okay. So I will go in. Okay. So what's the intent of Section P? Answer my questions here. What do you guys think? So we'll do a little quiz. I don't have prizes like Tom did, though. Sorry. I should have brought candy, right? We could have thrown candy out to people. That would have been good. So what would you say here? Is it A, to identify any device, material, or equipment that serves to restrain the resident in any way? Is it B, to document the number of devices that are used to restrain the resident at any time during the look-back period? C, to record the frequency the resident was restrained by the listed device at any time over the look-back period? Or D, specify the type of restraint that was used on the resident to meet the medical requirements? Okay. Which of the following does not meet the criteria for coding of a physical restraint? A manual method or physical or mechanical device, material, or equipment. B, used for the purpose other than to treat medical symptoms or improve the patient mobility. And C, attached or adjacent to the resident's body that the individual can't remove. And D, restricts the freedom of movement or normal access to the body. Okay. So B, it's used for the purpose other than to treat medical. So what is saying, what is the really, it's how the question's written. What are all the criteria that meet kind of physical restraint? So the one that doesn't fit into the whole group there is B, right? Because it has to meet, it has to treat a medical symptom, right? That's part of the definition. All right. That's a little bit of a tricky question. All right, so when determining if a device, material, or equipment meets the definition of a physical restraint, what is the key factor to consider? You should all know this question. D, you're going to hear it in your sleep.
What's the effect of restraints?
You're probably sick of me saying it, right? D, what's the effect upon the resident, right? That's really the key here. You must code all devices you identify that meet the definition of a restraint for the purpose of the MDS. Right, okay. If a device, material, or equipment meets the definition of a physical restraint but increases mobility for the resident, do not code as a restraint. Right, good, okay. Right, it's okay. We still code it as a restraint, but we take credit for it there. The code you select for a physical restraint indicates what? So what does it do? A, the frequency with which the restraint was used or observed during the look-back period, the type of restraint observed and used during the look-back period, or how the restraint was used to limit residents' mobility during the look-back period. Well, it's actually A, because it's a frequency code. How often are we using it? You know, we're using it not daily, or not at all, right? It's, again, a little bit of a quirky question depending on how you read it, because it's also telling you what restraint you used, right? Because you're coding the type of restraint. I can see where, so it's okay. So first we're going to identify which one of the restraints, and then we're putting a frequency. So it's, all right, I'm the proctor. We'll take that question out. We won't count that on the test. All right. So, really, I'm not going to read these slides or anything. These are the same things that we talked about. So the biggest thing, the take-home message is we have to be champions of restraints. This is passion. This is a huge issue for quality of life for our residents. We have to fight families sometimes on this. We can't restrain just because a family wants us to restrain. We have to go through this whole process, and it takes a lot of time and effort to make sure that we explain to our residents and to our families that by putting a restraint on someone does not guarantee that they won't fall, right? And they won't get hurt. But if they do fall and they're restrained, or they do fall and they have side rails up, what's the negative of it? They have a much greater chance of having a major injury, right? So maybe they would have fallen and, you know, had a bruise, but now we've added a side rail, and now they've climbed 6 or 7 inches over that, and now they go to the floor and we have a fracture. So are we going to go to Q&A? Yeah, I'm done. So thank you very much, and we're going to turn it over to Jennifer.